Good morning. Welcome to Life Unedited. I'm your host, John Aberle. Today, my guest is Gabriel Wilinski. He has written the book, 6 Million Crucifixions. We will be touching on the Catholic Church and various parts of its history. Gabriel, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you.
I appreciate you coming on. Let's jump right into it. Why write the book? Give us a little bit of your background and then why this topic would intrigue you.
The main reason for me writing the book was because ever since I was a teenager, I was fascinated by the Holocaust and the magnitude of it and the incomprehensible nature of what happened at that period. And after many, many years of reading about the Second World War and about the Holocaust and being really unable to understand how could somebody do something so horrific to somebody else, I finally understood. I finally really comprehended why the Holocaust happened, and you know, that motivated me to share the insight with some other people, and that's why I wrote the book.
Going back then to World War II, and we'll pretty much start it there. We're going to hit on different areas of the Catholic Church today, but there's two primary ones. I want to get into the World War II, where the Catholic Church stood, as well as where we stand today with the Catholic Church in the priest pedophile situation. But jumping back to World War II, you have Pope Pius XII is the Pope at the time. You have Italy is in the war. They're on the side of the Axis powers, the Germans. And where does the Vatican stand, Gabriel? Are they passively watching what's happening here in Europe as far as what Germany and Italy are doing and also rounding up the Jews? Or are they behind the scenes kind of pulling the strings a little bit?
They were not really pulling the strings. Well, the Vatican was in a difficult position because the Vatican had been, ever since the time of Pius XI, before Pius XII, in the 1930s, the Vatican had seen the rise of Adolf Hitler in Germany and the increasing anti-Semitism in Germany and other places in Europe, and it was something that they couldn't really control, and they didn't particularly like Hitler and they didn't particularly like the Nazis, but they disliked communism a lot more, and the Vatican felt that they, even though they didn't like either of these two totalitarian states, they felt that communism was their mortal enemy. They felt that communism was really the worst of the two. And therefore, in some ways, directly or indirectly, they supported Nazism as a bulwark against communism. So even during the 30s, before Pius XII took over the papacy, they signed a concordat, which is an agreement, international agreement between the Vatican and the Nazi state in 1933, which gave the Nazi state credence and validity, if you will, in front of the international community. And they did this because they felt that they had to protect Catholic interests in Germany, which were considerable at the time, and the concordat was meant to do that. Now, the interesting thing about it is that the Vatican, by doing that, the Vatican was the first power or state to recognize, if you will, the Nazi state. And that was followed shortly afterwards, also in 1933, by the lift of a ban that the Catholic Church had, the German Catholic Church had, that prevented Germans from becoming members of the Nazi Party.
Hmm.
This was interesting because before then, the German bishops were always admonishing the faithful not to become members of the Nazi Party under pain of excommunication. Now, after Hitler took power and after the Concordat, they lifted this ban. And what this led to was a flood, if you will, of Catholic Germans joining the Nazi Party in droves. And you know, after that, it was just impossible to control because at that point, then millions and millions and millions of Germans joined the party, and it was just impossible. It was a tsunami after that.
Gabriel, your family comes from Eastern Europe. They immigrated to Uruguay. You were born after World War II, going into the early '60s. your religious background? Do you come from a Catholic background? Do you come from a Jewish background?
I come from a Jewish background. I'm not a practicing, I don't practice any religion, as a matter of fact, but I come from that background. My grandparents, as you said, come from East Europe, three of them from Poland, one from Lithuania. And they all left Europe in the 1930s before the war. So they you know, basically left and they went wherever they could go. At the time, it wasn't easy for anybody wanting to emigrate out of Europe to do so. You know, immigration was mostly closed. And so they left for South America, and they were they just landed in Uruguay.
The Catholic Church at the time, just before World War II, you see the rise of Hitler coming, as you just stated. The world knows it's coming, but the world's kind of got its head in the sand, hoping it doesn't happen. Was the Vatican hedging its bets, so to speak? Were they kind of saying, okay, it looks like the Germans are going to win this one, we better stay on the side of the victor?
Absolutely. The Catholic Church had done that for many, many centuries, as a matter of fact. They definitely did that during the Second World War. Again, you know, as I said, they didn't particularly like the Nazis, but they felt that the Nazis were going to win, and this was true for many years into the war, probably until the tide turned in 1942 or so, 43. They definitely believed that the Germans were going to win.
You realize this isn't, as well as you probably do, as you, you know, you wrote the book. But as far as overall discussion in religion, this topic does not come up as far as the Catholic Church being in any way sided with the Germans during World War II, and especially being a Catholic. I've been raised a Catholic. I no longer practice a Catholic religion, but I know my history pretty well. It never really brought up. You would never hear this discussed in a religious class that, hey, you know, the Catholic Church, we hedged our bets and you know, kind of stuck with the Germans. Why do you think it's still so shrouded? Because I talked with several people about this topic coming up today, and these are pretty educated people, and they really didn't have any idea of what truly the Catholic Church's stance was during World War II or in a lot of the topics we're going to be discussing. So why do you think it's purposely hidden, or society just doesn't want to know?
It is understandable if you think about it. It's a very embarrassing thing. I mean, the German Catholic Church was very much in favor of the Nazis. I mean, with some exceptions, you know, there was Bishop Preysing and maybe one or two others who were really opposed, you know, high-profile bishops who were opposed to the Nazis, but for the most part, they were very much in favor, and openly so. And they actually had pastoral letters and sermons and all kinds of things that they did that supported the Nazis. And this was actually, not, as a matter of fact, this was not even the worst of it. The worst of it was their direct collaboration in the persecution of the Jews, because the German Catholic Church, when the Nazis asked them for their baptismal records that they kept in their churches, they very, very gladly provided the Nazis with all this information. The reason why the German government asked for that information was because early on in the persecution of the Jews in the early 30s, the German government wanted to know who was a German Catholic and who was a German Protestant and who was a German Jew. And as you know, in Germany, as opposed to East Europe, like Poland and Russia, Jews in Germany were indistinguishable from Catholics or Protestants. They dressed the same way, they spoke the same way, they practiced the same professions. So you couldn't tell who was a Jew in Germany. They didn't dress differently with the black dress and the hats and the long beards. None of that stuff that was so common in Eastern Europe was the case in Germany.
Was that? I'm sorry, just kind of give some history to the people here. Was that a reason then why the Star of David was, you had to wear that if you were a Jew in Germany at the time?
Absolutely. And incidentally, the the law that forced Jews to wear a distinguishing Star of David was to, you know, on the one hand, to be able to tell who was a Jew, so that the German Catholics, or Christians rather, would not have to mingle with them, would not have to, you know, exchange anything with them, any contact with them at all. Incidentally, an interesting point of information here is that the things that the Germans instituted, such as the ghettos, the distinguishing marking and the clothes, like the Star of David, and other things of that nature, were instituted in the Nuremberg Laws in 1935, and they did many other things. They prohibited the Jews from practicing all sorts of religion. All sorts of professions. They banned them from public office. They didn't allow them to do all sorts of things, to own land and to do all kinds of things like that. And the important thing about this point is that none of it, absolutely none of these restrictions and these things that were imposed on the Jews, like the Star of David and so on, were new. All these things had been imposed on the Jews by the Catholic Church for centuries, long before Hitler was ever born. So
it was just a way then. The way I'm seeing this is that this kind of gave the Catholic Church more of a reason to kind of maybe not condemn the Jews is the word I want, but maybe to kind of push them to the brink, to force their laws, the Catholic Church laws, or their punishments upon the Jews because the situation was right.
The Catholic Church certainly felt that way. They may not have agreed with the racial aspects of German antisemitism, because for the Catholic Church, in their defense, even those Jews that had been converted to Catholicism, they were Catholic. And for the Catholic Church, anybody that wanted to be converted could be saved. And therefore, the notion of somebody being inferior or being bad, inherently bad because of their biology, which is what the Nazis believed, was inherently wrong. This was a heresy. This was incorrect from a Catholic perspective. So the Catholic Church didn't agree with the persecution of the Jews from a racial perspective. They did, however, think that, you know, persecuting the Jews was not necessarily a bad thing because the Jews were bad.
Christ killers. That's how they were referred to in the Catholic Church up and through the 50s. The Jews were referred to as Christ killers.
That was perhaps one of the worst things that they imposed on the Jews. They belief that the Jews had killed Jesus. So that was one of them. But the Church has also taught for many centuries that the Jews were pernicious and they were minions of the devil, and that, as you mentioned, they were Christ killers, and all these various different things. And actually, the list goes on. And this is the premise of my book, in essence, this had prepared the mindset of millions of people around the world, predominantly in Europe, to hate Jews. They already hated Jews. When Hitler came to power and started to spew venom against Jews, he found the population was ready, willing, and able to listen to him and accept his message of hatred, simply because they had been hearing all this stuff.
Well, there you go, Gabriel. It's been set up. It was set in motion. We're going to take a break. Be back in a few moments. We're talking to Gabriel Wladzinski. He has written the book 6 Million Crucifixions. Be back in a few. Could you tell us where to find a copy of your book, 6 Million Crucifixions?
The book is available in pretty much all bookstores. It's going to be probably easier, to find it online on Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble.
Okay. Your research for the book, I know you spent a lot of time putting this together, but may I ask some of the sources that you use before we get more in-depth into the actual topics?
Yeah, sure. I consulted a number of different sources. There were a number of different books that were written on the, on similar topics that were used as secondary sources. And in terms of primary sources, I looked at a number of different archives and some documents from the Vatican as well. In terms of the graphic elements that go into the book, because I use photographs and documents from the Middle Ages as well to illustrate some of the points. I consulted a number of different archives in Europe and the United States Holocaust Museum, Memorial Museum.
Okay.
And so the material that goes into the book comes from a great variety of different areas and different sources, and it's consolidated into one cohesive book.
Now, at the time, again, we're stepping back here. It's World War II, just prior to World War II. The Vatican has signed and sort of an agreement with the Third Reich. It appears to me that the perfect storm has occurred. You have the Nazis coming into power. You have the Catholic Church who condemns the Jewish population. Again, the term Christ killer cried a lot during, up and through that time period. Again, that perfect storm. How did the Mussolini and his coming to power help solidify all this? Was this the final piece of the puzzle?
It didn't really affect that very much. The Italians were not so anti-Semitic as the Germans, but Mussolini felt that he had to, because he was aligned with Hitler ideologically and he was aligned with Hitler politically, he felt that he had to become anti-Semitic too. You know, initially he didn't start that way, but then he turned that way. And so much so that you know, at in the late 30s, in 1938, Italy instituted the racial anti-Jewish laws similar to those instituted in Germany in 1935. And the interesting thing about that point is that in Italy something interesting happened. The local population was, for the most part, going along with this, but there were a great part of the population that did not agree with this. Even though they were Catholic, these people did not necessarily hate their Jewish neighbors, just in the same way as Catholics in Germany hated their Jewish neighbors. And this actually had positive effects later on during the war, especially at a time, and at the time when the Germans deported the Jews from Rome and from other places, the local population helped, gave shelter and so on, some of their Jewish neighbors. But again, the important point about this is the reaction of the Catholic Church. And the reason why this is important is because you could perhaps make the argument that in Germany, the German Catholic Church, which was very much aligned with what the Nazis were doing, you could make the argument perhaps that the German Church was semi-independent from the Vatican, from the Holy See, and they more or less did what they did. I don't particularly buy this argument, but you could potentially say
that. But you could buy
that
into it on a survival-type mechanism.
More or less.
Yeah, you can buy into it. I mean, I could sit there and say, look, I'm in the middle of hell here with the Germans, you know, with the Third Reich. Maybe I should at least appear to be doing,
Let's revisit this one in a second. Let me okay. finish the previous argument, and then let's revisit this one, because that's an important point too.
Okay.
But so the point that I was making is that you could make that the other one, the German Catholic Church was very remote, and maybe it was in the middle of the tsunami, as you were saying, and perhaps that's why they had to do this. But in Italy, on the other hand, this was the seat of the Catholic Church. This is where the Vatican is, and this is where they had the most power, the most influence. And so you could ask the question, well, all right, so what did the Vatican do when Mussolini instituted the racial anti-Jewish laws in 1938? And the answer is they didn't do anything. The only thing that the Catholic Church did in opposition to these laws was they complained about one particular clause in these laws that made, that in essence invalidated the mixed marriages. And the reason why the Catholic Church felt that they had to complain about this was because they felt that this in a way invalidated conversions of Jews to Catholicism, which for the Church meant that this was an irrevocable thing. You know, a Jew that had converted to Catholicism was a Catholic, and therefore all the the presumed legacy of Judaism that was in the blood, which is what the racial anti-Semites believed, was nonsense from a Catholic doctrinal perspective. So the Catholic Church only complained about mixed marriages, cloth, and about conversions. They did not complain about all the other stuff. So for the Catholic Church, it seemed that it was okay to deprive a Jew of his livelihood, or prevent him from working as a teacher, as an accountant, or anything else, and to take all the rights from them and eventually to take their lives away from them. And interestingly enough, in 1943, when the deportation from Rome began, the Nazis basically took the Roms, they waited and took the most of their Jews from Rome away into concentration camps. Most of them died eventually in Auschwitz. And again, you could ask the question, so why did the Catholic Church, the most powerful organization in the world at the time, other than, of course, the totalitarian powers, in terms of reach, what did they do? And the answer is they didn't do anything, because they may have talked to the Germans about it, and they said, this is wrong, but they didn't do anything active to prevent the raid and to prevent the deportation. The Pope didn't make a public declaration. He didn't denounce what was going on, even though the Jews were being deported from under his very window, so to speak. And this is the title of a book on the subject, by the way, by Susan Succotti. And it's interesting to point out that for Pope Pius XII, this didn't mean necessarily that he was in agreement with the deportation of the Jews, and he very well knew that the deportation of the Jews meant certain death for them, because by that time in the 40s, the Vatican knew exactly what was going on in the concentration camps and
in
East Europe.
Yeah, I mean, you have to have at a certain point. I mean, you're pretty close to the action there. And I assume the Pope has to know what's going on as far as, hey, they're not just being rounded up and taken to work somewhere and, produce goods for the Nazi war machine. They're producing goods till they die, if they're even given a chance to do that. I'm trying to understand.
It's important to point out here that the word assume here is we should not be using the word assume here, because there is no assumption and there is no speculation here at all.
Okay.
We know for certain, we have certainty about what the Pope knew at that time. I mean, there's all kinds of documentation, and we know what he knew at that time. There were reports coming from right and left at the time. And so the Pope, the Vatican knew exactly what was the fate of the Jews in East Europe, in Poland and Russia and so on. And they knew of the nature of the concentration camps. There was a report called the Auschwitz Protocol that they knew about, and this described in detail, in writing, what was going on inside of Auschwitz-Birkenau. So there is no assumption here, no speculation at all. The Vatican knew...
Yeah.
Exactly what was happening. And they may not have known the exact numbers of the genocide going on.
But
they knew exactly
matter.
What was going on.
It doesn't matter if you don't know the exact number. There's a number that's going on. Now, at the time, the Holocaust, as it was playing out, still wasn't that well known in the western part of the world as far as the Allies were concerned. We were still getting bits and pieces of that. Couldn't the Vatican have reached out? Or maybe they did, I don't know, to the Allies and said, hey, maybe you want to take a look at this. Maybe we can give you some eyes and ears here where you need it. Because it was pretty well known that by 1943, Germany wasn't going to win this war.
Right.
I mean, it was just stalled for another 2 years. But it was pretty well figured out at that point that, Germany wasn't going to be what Germany wanted, thought it was going to be.
Right.
Did the Vatican just shut its eyes again and say, the hell with this, we'll let it play itself out? Better yet, Gabriel, was it to their advantage, and I mean now the Vatican, I mean the Pope, to let it play itself out. The more Jews killed, the better. Maybe that would have been the mindset, maybe not spoken of, but definitely felt.
No, I don't think the church liked the or wanted the Jews to be killed. They felt that the Jews were guilty of monstrous crimes, but they felt that what was happening to them was perhaps too much.
But then why do nothing?
The church had punished the Jews for centuries prior to the Second World War for what they believed the Jews were guilty of, for their disbelief in Jesus and other things, and therefore they believed that the Jews had it coming for them, and this was a deserved punishment.
Well, then that's it. Then they were allowing it to play out the way they wanted it to play. It was to their advantage not to get involved.
I wouldn't go that far.
Okay.
Because, as I said, the Catholic Church didn't necessarily believe that massacring millions of men, women, and children was the right thing to do. But the important point to make here, too, is that you were making the point earlier that the Western powers didn't really know that much about it, and we knew bits and pieces here in the West. But this was actually not true either, because, the Western powers, the Allies, knew exactly what was going on. And as a matter of fact, Roosevelt had sent an emissary to the Vatican to persuade the Pope to actually act, to do something about it, even earlier than 1943. The British ambassador, Darcy D'Osborne, did the same thing. As a matter of fact, Darcy D'Osborne actually wrote to his friends in the Foreign Office that he believed that Pope Pius XII was a moral coward because he was not doing anything about what was going on. So the Western powers knew that the Pope had the power to do something that was even a better power, if you will, than the one that the Western powers had, because they felt that if the Western powers, the British and the Americans, the French didn't really count for very much at the time, but if the British and the Americans, if they actually said to the German people and to the peoples of Europe, rather, do not do this, it's wrong to kill Jews and it's immoral and it's illegal and it's a crime, and if they had said that, they felt that the Nazis could have turned that into propaganda, and they would have basically accused, dismissed the whole thing by saying this is just Allied propaganda. They're just talking bad about us, the Germans, and all this is nonsense, and look, they're bad people themselves. However, the Allied powers felt that the way to circumvent this problem was to have the Catholic Church do this, because the Catholic Church had an advantage that the Allies didn't have. The Catholic Church was a multinational institution that had still functioning bodies everywhere in the theater of war. They had priests everywhere with reach to the faithful everywhere. And they had a way of printing materials and disseminating information to the faithful everywhere. And they had the ears and the hearts of hundreds of millions of people. So the Catholic Church was in the best possible position of any other institution in the world at the time to tell the people, do not do this, do not kill Jews, it's a crime, it's a mortal sin. They had the power, they did not have the will.
Well, that's where, and I want to kind of take back what I said. Yes, you're correct. I knew that the Western powers themselves, the Allies themselves, the hierarchy, knew what was going on, and I knew there were talks between them and the Vatican. What I meant, when I said it, was the average person, the average civilian, the average soldier, the average person back then didn't know, and it wasn't spoken of. And I think everyone, for the most part, thought, at least on the Western side, as I talked to my grandparents and so forth growing up, that the Catholic Church was doing the right thing, whatever that may have been at the time. Now it's coming out. They were in a position, you're saying they were in a position where they could have really changed the course of how the Holocaust might have gone?
Would that have been the Catholic Church?
Yeah. Well, was the Vatican...
Yeah, I am persuaded of it. I mean, okay. I cannot prove it, obviously, because there's no way to rewind the clock.
But that's your belief.
But I think so. I think that if the Catholic Church had said in no uncertain terms to the faithful that murdering Jews was a crime and a mortal sin, and they should refrain from doing that, they should refrain from participating in the machinery of murder in any way whatsoever, from pulling the trigger to driving the trains, to denouncing their Jewish neighbors and doing everything else that the Catholics were doing at the time, then they would have stopped, because, you know, the Pope was still, and of course, a Pope is still a very powerful figure for Catholics, and therefore, if the Pope had said this, and had said it repeatedly, and all the bishops and all the priests had said it in every sermon to every single parish in the middle of nowhere, if they had said it everywhere, then the faithful would have listened. I mean, surely the hardened murderers and you know, psychopaths would not have listened, but most of them would have.
That's the power of the church. We're talking to Gabriel Levinsky. He's written the book 6 Million Crucifixions. Be back in a few moments.
Hey, I'm Melissa Rivers, and you are listening to 1520 AM.
Welcome back to Life Unedited. I'm your host, John Averly. Today, my guest is Gabriel Wolinski. He has written the book 6 Million Crucifixions. We are talking about the Catholic Church's stance and its participation during World War II, how it had appeared it allied itself with the Third Reich. Gabriel, before we took the break, we were talking about how the Catholic Church, maybe even theoretically is not even the word, if you break everything down, could have played a different, major different role in how the Holocaust happened. Is there any guilt today, remorse, anything that the Vatican feels about what happened 60 years ago?
Yes, absolutely. The Catholic Church has done many wrongs during the Second World War, and the fact that Pope Pius XII lived until 1960s meant that very little was done to address these issues and redress these wrongs. However, after Pope Pius XII died and Pope John XXIII came to the papacy, there was a major change. Pope John XXIII, who was Bishop Angelo Roncalli before, was actively involved in saving Jews during the Second World War.
Yes.
And he was one of the good guys, if you will. He actually did do good things, and he did live a true Catholic life, if you will, and of loving your neighbor and the other teachings of Catholicism. So when he came to the papacy, one of the very first things that he did was remove from the Good Friday prayer the terms perfidious Jews, which had been a source of animosity toward Jews forever. And this had been one thing that was greatly discussed, by the way, in the 1930s in the Vatican, and the Holy Office, you know, the Inquisition, in essence, decided to shut down an effort to remove the term perfidious Jews from the Good Friday prayer. But Roncalli believed that this was wrong, and rightly so, and he actually did remove it. And then he later instituted a new Vatican Council, which happened in the early 60s, and this was later called the Second Vatican Council. And in this council, the Catholic Church decided many things, but among them, and what concerns us for the topic today, is they decided to remove the accusation that the Jews had been the killers of Jesus, and basically decided that it could not be blamed upon the Jews of Jesus' time, or even worse, on the Jews of all time, that they were guilty of the death of Jesus, which of course was on the shoulders of the Romans, not the Jews.
Yes, the Romans, who ended up becoming Christians and Catholics, and hence you have the Roman Catholic Church.
The point that I'm making here, it was the Romans that killed Jesus.
Yes,
not the
that's
Jews.
What I'm saying. It's amazing how we forget that it was the Romans that actually killed Christ.
Well, it is not so amazing when you look at the fact that history was changed and was perverted, if you will. Even in the Gospels, if you reading the Gospels, the canonical Gospels, you see that there's a lot of anti-Jewish sentiment in them, and there's like hundreds of anti-Semitic verses in those books, and the Acts of the Apostles and so on, and therefore those books, coupled with the writings of the fathers of the church in the first few centuries of the Catholic era, led the faithful to believe that the Jews were the ones who killed Jesus and were guilty of his death. And there was a sense of animosity that grew from there and snowballed into something as giant as the Holocaust later on. But the point here is that the Second Vatican Council basically dismissed this notion as false, and they sort of exonerated, quote unquote, the Jews from the death of Jesus. And they also announced another important thing, which the Catholic Church had been preaching for centuries, which was that that Judaism was no longer a valid religion, and that Christianity had superseded Judaism. And the Second Vatican Council declared that Judaism was indeed still a valid religion, and the Jews had their own way of attaining salvation, and we had to respect them for whatever they believed. And this was a big break with the past. You know, this is something completely contrary to what the Catholic Church had been preaching and teaching for a couple of thousand years before then, where the Church had always said that there is no salvation outside the Catholic Church, and that Judaism was superseded, and Jews were now basically almost heretics because they believed in something different from what Catholicism was teaching. And therefore they were considered to be almost second class citizens because of that. They were supposed to be slaves to Catholics, and they were supposed to be subservient to Catholics because the Catholics believe that Judaism had been superseded and no longer valid.
Amazing, and it's true though. And I'm gonna, real quick, I want to have you back on. I'll call you later on sometime this week. Have you back on again in a few weeks to really get into a talk about the Catholic Church as far as time and history and place and how we got here. But stepping back again into the situation, the end of World War II now, it is the spring of 45. The Allies are coming in from all directions, the Russians from the east, the Americans, French, and the British are coming from the west. What happens now as the Third Reich begins to fall? How does the Vatican get involved in starting to hide and help process out of the country Nazi war criminals?
This is a sad part of the story too. The Catholic Church as a general institution was not necessarily doing this, but some members of the Vatican were certainly helping Nazi war criminals, as well as the Ustasha from Croatia, which were another totalitarian state, extremely murderous, perhaps even worse than the SS in some ways. They were helping all these people escape. And the reason why they were doing this is because many elements in the Curia and the Vatican felt that what the Nazis had done was not necessarily so bad after all. You know, these people were just doing their duty, and they were good Catholics, and, yeah, you know, they had to be helped. And, you know, the past was past, and let's move on. This was the attitude that they had. And these members actually instituted what ended up being called the Rat Lines. And I discussed this in my book, 6 Million Crucifixions. The Rat Lines was a series of, was basically a channel that was instituted to protect, to remove the wanted war criminals out of captivity in the hands of the Allies. You know, so they gave them safe passage to places in Italy, mostly into the Vatican, and they were protected there. They were given shelter, food, money, and eventually they were given passage out of Europe into safe havens around the world, mostly to Argentina, but other places as well. And they did this by asking foreign powers like Argentina and Canada and Australia and other places to receive these people. They asked them for visas, in essence. They gave them documents. They printed false documents, mostly from the Red Cross. But they gave them identities, and these Nazis basically had these false identities. They had visas from these foreign countries that were mostly negotiated for by the Catholic Church, and therefore they went to Genoa, boarded the ship, and they left, and they had good lives abroad.
But hold on. The Catholic Church, then, in my mind, at this moment, what we're talking about, they are committing war crimes by hiding and enabling the Nazi war criminals to move on into another life, to get to another country. Shouldn't the Allies have been pursuing the Vatican just on that alone, as far as war crimes are concerned?
Yeah, you're right. And as a matter of fact, I make this point in the book, too, that the Allies should have instituted an international trial, just like Nuremberg, to prosecute members of the clergy that were guilty of crimes before, during, and after the Second World War. But, you know, keep in mind that the Allies, just like the Church, were interested in seeing these criminals escape Europe for one reason. And that reason was that the Cold War was starting to heat up at the time, and everybody felt, the Western powers and the Catholic Church felt, that they needed what they called freedom fighters. They needed people who knew how to fight communism, to fight communism. They felt, just like the Pope believed before, that the Nazis were the only bulwark against communism, they felt that these people, despite their horrific background, were the best suited people that could fight the rising communism and the infiltration of communism in the world. So they gave them safe haven, and they gave them passage out of Europe and out of the Allied prisons, so that these people could regroup to fight communism. And there were a number of different institutions that were guilty of this, not just the Catholic Church, but the Western powers, in particularly the American Secret Service, I'm sorry, not Secret Service, the spy agency of the time, if you will, as well as MI6 and MI5 for the British, were in cahoots with the Church in doing this. They were helping them also because they felt that these elements were critical in the fight against communism. So at the end of the Second World War, as unfortunate as this sounds, the priority was not to redress the wrongs being done in the past. It was not about justice. It was about fighting communism. And that was the main priority and the only thing that really concerned everyone at the time. And therefore, you see that, you know, there were millions of displaced Jews in displaced persons camps. And you have this horrible thing happen where, you know, people like, Franz Strangl, the commandant of Treblinka, and Adolf Eichmann, the architect of the Holocaust, if you will, were being helped by all these people, and particularly the Church, to escape Europe and have good lives outside of Europe.
Gabriel, we're going to roll into a break. We're talking to Gabriel Wyszynski. He has written the book 6 Million Crucifixions. We'll be back in a few moments.
Hey, what's up? I'm Matt.
I'm Kirby.
And I'm Mike, and we're from Rivers Monroe, and you're listening to WCHE 1520 AM,
the talk of Chester County.
Welcome back to Life Unedited. I'm your host, John Aberle. Today, my guest is Gabriel Wyszynski. We've been talking about a book he has written called 6 Million Crucifixions. It is an account of what the Catholic Church was doing during World War II. Gabriel, tell us how we can find the book, please.
The book can be found on Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble, and it's available in other bookstores as well.
Gabriel, before we took the break, we were talking about how the Catholic Church was instrumental in helping the Nazis get out of Germany, get to different parts of the world to escape being prosecuted for war crimes. What about Israel. Israel comes into being in 1949. The Mossad is basically built on the back of going after Nazis, having Nazi hunter teams. How did they take this? I mean, were they aware that the Allies and the church had been very instrumental in helping the Nazis get away?
Well, when Israel came into existence in 1948, they actually the Israelis, of course, was they were mostly European survivors, and they knew what had happened very clearly.
Okay.
And but they didn't necessarily know all the details about all this stuff that that the church was helping Nazis escape Europe at the time. This was not known. This was not a public knowledge at the time. And
but how about the government itself, though?
If it had been of public knowledge, the outrage would have been so big that I think it would have been impossible not to prosecute these people. But the fact that it was very secret and very few people knew about it meant that it was not prosecuted. So in Israel, the Mossad and other organizations there, they were not necessarily built to go after Nazis, but they did go after Nazis. When Eichmann was caught in Argentina in 1960s, he was caught by the people from the Mossad, and he was taken there for prosecution eventually in Jerusalem. So it was not a motivation for vengeance as much as it was for justice. One important point that is it would be interesting to make here is that when the vote in the United Nations was made for the formation of the State of Israel in 1948, actually the vote was in 1947. It was interesting to note here that the officials in the Israeli government at the time were negotiating with a number of different people, including Rockefeller, who was not very much in favor of Israel and Jews at all, and Nelson Rockefeller, but he had very strong influence in South America, and at the time, before the vote was cast in the United Nations for the formation of Israel, they needed votes. They needed as many votes as they could. And the Jews had information on Rockefeller that he had collaborated with the Nazis during the war. And they basically told him that they were willing to go public with this information, which would have, of course, ruined him. And so they asked him to, in exchange for their silence, to go to Latin American countries where he had a very strong amount of influence at the time and persuade them to vote in favor for the formation of the State of Israel. And he did that, and he switched a number of countries in South America to vote in favor at the United Nations. And in the vote in, I believe it was November 47, most of these countries actually did vote in favor for the formation of the State of Israel. And so that actually worked out in the Jews' favor.
Wow.
His knowledge.
Amazing. That old statement, politics brings, strange bedfellows there. That is true, because you've given us a history lesson this morning. Connecting dots that I wouldn't have been able to connect and wouldn't even thought of connecting. With about 2 minutes left, Gabriel, can you tell me, with your research, the things you've learned, the things that you've been involved with, how do you view religion right now? Real quick, is it something that's important to you, or do you just see it as a political tool?
I am not in favor of religion at all. As a matter of fact, I think that science is a much better method of knowing about nature and about life in general than religion is.
So your take on all this through all your research, it's just better to leave it well left alone, not be bothered with it?
I, I think that, you know, religion has a deleterious and pernicious effect on people. So, and the example that we described this morning is a very strong and powerful one. You see the very negative effect religion has had in one particular topic, and of course there's many other ones that I could talk about, but this is one particular aspect, one particular teaching of one religion that has been extremely bad.
Have you got any other books in the works?
I have other books in the work, in works, but I cannot talk about them.
That's okay. Hey, I'm looking forward to it. You'll be available for me if I decide to call you in a couple weeks, do a little bit more in-depth on religion?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Listen, we've been talking to Gabriel Wyszynski. He's written the book 6 Million Crucifixions. Gabriel, one last time, tell us how we can find the book.
The book is available on Barnes & Noble online as well as Amazon.com, and my name is Gabriel Wyszynski, and again, the name of the book is 6 Million Crucifixions, How Christian Teachings About Jews Paved the Road to the Holocaust.
Great. Thanks a lot, Gabriel. Look, I really enjoyed it. Thanks, man.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.